This is The Annex, a sociology podcast. I'm Joseph Cohen from the City University of New York, Queens College.
I'm Leslie Hinkson from Georgetown University.
And I'm Gabriel Rossman from UCLA.
Today, family estrangement. Our guest is Christina Sharp from the Communications Department at the University of Washington. Our discussion was recorded on Wednesday, May 7th, 2019. And now we turn to Christina Sharp. Christina is an assistant professor in the Department of Communication at the University of Washington, and she has two forthcoming articles on family estrangement that we're going to talk about today. The first one is Making Meaning of the Parent-Child Relationship, a dialogic analysis of parent-initiated estrangement narratives in the Journal of Family Communication, and You're Not Welcome Here, a Grounded Theory of Family Distancing in Communications Research. Christina, I remember first hearing you on NPR around Thanksgiving, and we talked all weekend long about your research. And I'm glad to be catching you in May. I guess this is your low season. I guess you make the media rounds at Christmas, Thanksgiving, Easter. Is that
well? There's certainly a peak there, but with Mother's Day and Father's Day coming, this is the second round.
So it's like any time family gets together, someone's interested in estrangement, I suppose.
For sure.
So your work, let's talk about basic concepts. There are a lot of us who don't study the family. What exactly is family estrangement?
So I define family estrangement as when at least one family member voluntarily and intentionally distances themselves because of an ongoing negative relationship with another family member.
What kind of families experience estrangement? Like, why do people estrange themselves from family members?
I would say any family might experience family estrangement. If you ask adult children why they distance themselves from their families, they often report things like a variety of abuse, from physical, psychological to substance abuse, or some mental health issues going on in the family. Parents might report other. So if it's a parent who has distanced their child, they might talk about something like elder abuse. Or if it's a parent who's been distanced by a child, they might attribute that to a new relationship that their child has, where like maybe their spouse has turned the child against them. So there's a variety of reasons, I would say, that people give for why this happens.
And you know that it's quite common, right? Like, clinicians think that a lot of people don't even recognize that they're estranged, or that estrangement exists and is causing problems. Did I read that right?
So there's no official statistics, although there is a great nonprofit organization in the UK called Standalone, who surveyed much of like anyone who was really identifying as being estranged. They're coming in, and most studies I've seen are coming in somewhere around 20%.
Wait, 1/5 of families have an estrangement, an estranged relationship within them?
That is what the data is indicating. So there's a family study scholar, Megan Gilligan. She found in a national survey, like a larger data set, that about 12% of mothers identified being estranged from at least one of her children. And we know that this is more common amongst fathers. So I don't think that 20% is all that unrealistic.
Well, that's a ton. Yeah. And then, and you note that estrangement can exist in degrees, right? It's not like a binary either or situation, but people can estrange to different magnitudes.
Yeah. So, I would say that it's a misnomer that you're either estranged or not. I would say that people are more or less estranged, because estrangement, the characteristics of estrangement, there's lots of them. So someone might be really physically distant, but go home for the holidays. Someone might have no contact, or someone might even live in the same town and not have any meaningful interaction. But I would say that they're all a stranger, just a different flavor of it.
Let's talk about your study. So you spoke to, we'll talk about the first one. You spoke to 52 adults who you say engaged in communicated practices to distance themselves from their parents. So is that what you mean? Like they just stop calling, or maybe they'll only show up on the obligatory sort of Christmas and Easter? These were your subjects?
Yeah. So I talked to 52 adult children, and they kind of talked about 8 different behaviors they were engaging in to varying degrees. Mm-hmm. 2 of them had to do with communication in terms of how much I'm talking to my family versus are those conversations meaningful? 2 mm-hmm. of them had to do with emotion. So do I feel emotion for you? And if I do, is that positive or negative? Okay. Physical distance is typically a characteristic of estrangement. Something I call role reciprocity. So the idea, are we doing things that family members do?
Okay.
A desire to reconcile is up for grabs. A lot of people, at least the adult children, discuss not wanting to reconcile.
Huh.
And then also the degrees to which people took legal action against their family. Or legal action that distance themselves. So for example, some people change their name or change their durable power of attorney.
Wow. And when you, and you noted that when you, I remember hearing this in your interview, when you spoke to a lot of the parents who were estranged, they didn't even know why their children were pushing them out.
So that comes from Kristen Carr and her colleague's study about estrangement attributions or reasons why parents identified being estranged from their child. And many of them said they didn't know why. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot more typical amongst parents than it is children. So the majority of children who I have spoken to, in fact, all of them, had a reason for why it happened. Mm-hmm. But again, I was talking to people who initiated the distance, so they would have a reason.
Yeah. So I, so just full disclosure, like as someone who is estranged from her mother, right? The question that I have, like in terms of parents not knowing the reason, is it that parents don't know the reason, or is it that they don't want to confront the reason?
My question exactly.
I'm not sure. I mean, it's definitely possible. So there, as far as I'm aware, has never been a dyadic study. Mm-hmm. I mean, for lots of obvious reasons.
Yeah.
So it's also possible that there's a whole group of parents who legitimately haven't engaged in any problematic behavior, that their child has decided that they don't want a relationship. I mean, it's certainly possible.
That's possible. But, I don't know. I remember listening to this American Life episode. It's the episode where they're the kids who, like, they have their single mom, and she's a horrible mother. She's a really horrible mother, and they make up an imaginary family that they babysit for, right, in order to get away from her. And, the main point of that episode was, I think one of the kids actually confronts her at some point in time, and she was like, I did the best I could, right? And I think, like, for some of us who have parents who are just really horrible parents, I think we don't understand that they were working just with what they had, right? And it's just the luck of the draw that you happen to have a parent who didn't have much, right, to give back. And so I'm thinking that that might be part of the disconnect, right? It's like the kids not understanding that their parents actually did what they thought was the best given what they had to work with. And the kids being like, that if that was the best, that was horrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think certainly there's varying reasons into degrees of severity about why this happens. But I think you have hit on something really important, which is a lot of times people argue about what happened. Mm-hmm. And I always say it doesn't matter what happened. It matters what people perceived happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So like people are mm-hmm. arguing about the realities of things, but like if your child perceived this has happened, you need to meet them where they are.
Interesting.
And not try to convince them that something else has happened. Mm-hmm. Same thing with parents. If parents have a particular perception, I would encourage everyone to do some perspective taking, mm-hmm. right? Because it's hard to, which is extremely hard to do, but it's definitely like the perceptions of what happened are what people need to start behaving. People are behaving on their perceptions, I guess is what I'm saying,
yeah.
as opposed to what actually happened.
Yeah. So with this, you know, I forget who, somebody asked like, well, you know, is it always the case that the parents did something? I think sometimes this kind of thing can actually be driven by the kids having done something, you know, I mean, say an adult child has mm-hmm. a severe substance abuse problem, which happens a lot, mm-hmm. especially now that we have the opiate epidemic, you know, it could be that either, you know, a lot of times the parents, you know, will ostracize the kids after first trying to bail them out because, you know, that's actually what they're counseled to do, you know, and through, you know, basically co-dep therapy or something like that.
Well, and it's also possible parents need to distance their children to protect other children in mm-hmm. the home.
Yeah.
I think that... So we looked at people's, so parents who distance themselves from their children, we looked at their narratives and we found that in a different way, distancing yourself from your child in some ways is even harder because of what we were talking about before, this ideology of intensive parenting. Like what type of parent, quote unquote, gives up on their child?
I know.
Right.
So there's right. even if the reason the parent does it is like a really good reason, you know, they were being abused or they were protecting other people in the house. The culture isn't very sympathetic.
Yeah.
How often do you look at the, you know, the both sides and say, oh, the estranger really is the one sorting stuff out? Like, or do you find that in general, the person doing the estrangement, like there has to be something serious going on for it to get to that point?
Well, whoever is initiating distance is not mm-hmm. like whatever they're perceiving is typically very severe.
Okay.
People just don't become estranged. In fact, to the point where you believe that your family is a voluntary relationship, it takes quite a lot because our culture tells us we can never get away from our families.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, so by the time a person gets to the point where they're like, that can't be, it's usually because something very severe has happened.
Yeah. I mean, I come from like a very Catholic immigrant family, right? You know, and it's like there's a commandment, right? That's like all around honoring thy mother and father, which our interpretation is, right? You know, like family is everything. And so suck everything up and, you know what I mean? And that's it. Like, it doesn't matter what people did or what people do. It's just about family and maintaining that family. And I'm like, I assume that like even outside of Catholic immigrant families, that this whole kind of norm of just saying, you know what, you just need to, like, family is family and you need to stick with family is one that's just widespread in the U.S. And if that's the case, if you're saying that 1 in 5, like, people have this kind of estrangement, I think that's huge.
Well, I think it's funny that, you know, Christina said in our culture, which I think is true in a way, but I think it's probably less true in our culture than it is in almost any other. Right. I mean, what's distinctive about American society in particular and, you know, Western educated, industrialized, rich democratic societies in general is our intense emphasis on individualism that helps make possible mm-hmm. something like ostracism from your own close kin. I feel like in most traditional mm-hmm. societies or even many, you know, fully modern societies, but not, you know, as individualistic as ours, it would be almost impossible to ostracize yourself from kin, you know, and the the level might be a lot less than 20%.
So, yeah. So, I mean, my students, when I talk about this with my students, I have many students who grew up in China. And they tell me there isn't a word for this in our culture. There's just not a word for it. And I know that one of my colleagues who studies like Azerbaijan, she says that the mechanisms for family distancing, I'm not sure if it's Azerbaijan or Armenia, but she studies both. And she said, like, the people put it in the newspaper, like, it just looks different, I guess. It's maybe more formalized in different cultures. Like, people are disowned from their families. So, yeah, I think that culturally this looks different, but in some, you're absolutely right, that in some cultures, because of the values that they have, that estrangement really isn't viable.
How often is it ritualized? Because, like, you always hear, I've never personally witnessed this, but you occasionally hear about Jewish families sitting Shiva for, you know, which is Hebrew for mourning, for a child who, in fact, is alive as a form of, you know, symbolic ostracism.
I've never heard that.
So what was your question?
Oh, I said, how often is the ostracism not just something that happens, but something that is formalized with some type of ritual? So for instance, you know, sitting Shiva for a kid who is in fact, you know what,
like having a funeral sort of.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, basically.
Actually, some people have ritual, like I talked to some people who've ritualized it, not in that way. So for example, one of my participants, her family, they all got tattoos. That kind of marked them as a family, like that this person didn't have that, so they weren't in the family anymore.
Wow, that's extreme.
That's
and presumably
clear...
that was not the same type of family that would sit Shiva for someone.
Well, not with a tattoo.
I mean, even I think when people change their names, that's ritualistic. But I think that the practices probably vary quite a bit. But I haven't heard of, like, you know how sometimes there's divorce celebrations?
Yeah.
I haven't heard that with estrangement yet.
Christina, do you think that, estrangement is, or family estrangement is still considered a form of deviant behavior? And if so, like, what do you think is seen as more deviant, a parent distancing from a child or a child distancing from parents?
I think that it, being estranged or in the distancing process is very stigmatized. Both sides, for different reasons, they have different constraints. Children obviously have power inequity to their parents, especially if they're young children, right?
Yeah.
Parents have that extra layer of cultural expectation. I think that all my participants talk about feeling judged by a culture that believes a family is forever. I think we often conflate biology and love. And so regardless of what side you're on, it's really hard for people to resist this idea that, and we see it in the media too, right? That families, you know, we can choose our friends, but we can't choose our family. This is reiterated to us all the time. So I think regardless of what side you are going to face stigma, especially when people don't want to talk about the reasons for why they're estranged, because that is also stigmatized.
But do you feel it's healthy? Like, you've seen a lot of cases of estrangement. How often do you think to yourself, oh, you made the right choice? You know,
I think estrangement can be a really healthy solution to an unhealthy environment. Often for the person who's in at least initiating the distance, typically that's a great choice for them. We wouldn't tell our friends to go back to an abusive relationship, but we give this advice to people trying to distance themselves from their family all the time. There's lots of reasons why a person might want to distance themselves from their family, and somehow we hold them to different expectations often.
I have one last question for you, Christina. for those who do feel the need to separate themselves from a family relationship that is just not good for them, what are the successful sort of adaptations or coping mechanisms to the stress of doing so that you've observed?
So are you asking me how people like remain resilient as they do it?
Yeah, exactly. Like how do they, you know, weather the shame or the judgment or feelings of guilt, and how do they build something that would take the role of the lost family if there was a family that was in fact lost?
So often people create families of voluntary kin. Because they've been able to jettison more structural definitions of family, that opens up possibilities for creating families of people who are defined more transactionally or task oriented. So like, do we do the things that families do? Do we interact the way that families interact? Do we love each other? Do we care for one another? So I think it, for some people, they're able to really create a new sense of family.
And I think what you're like, that point that you're making, I think goes to this other point that, you know, people who like, or at least some of these people who have these distances from their family or other family members, they still in their minds recognize for themselves the importance of family, so much so that they try and recreate a new one in some ways.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, I think having support is really important, no matter what that looks like or who that comes from.
You've been listening to The Annex, the sociology podcast. A special thank you to Christina Sharp from the University of Washington. Christina wrote, "It was the straw that broke the camel's back, exploring the distancing processes communicatively constructed in parent-child estrangement backstories in the Journal of Family Communication." We're on the web, sociocast.org/annex, on Twitter @socianex, and on Facebook, The Annex Sociology Podcast. A special thank you to our senior producer for 2018-2019, Liseth Moreno. On behalf of Leslie Hinkson and Gabriel Rossman, I'm Joe Cohen. Thanks for listening, and have a great summer.
Bye.